I want to ask you real quickly, have you ever found yourself in a spot in life where you had become distracted from doing what you knew was the most important thing to be doing? I don't just mean in a moment like you were cleaning your house and got distracted. That's like a life skill of mine, getting distracted from that. But I mean, like, are you ever in a season of life and then things have happened and they just kind of got you off course and you're distracted and you're like, oh man, I kind of lost sight of what mattered there. Well, if you've ever been there, or have maybe multiple times been there, good news, the disciples in today's story will relate to you and me very well. But the question then becomes, how do we find our way back to focus? And Jesus will help us do that today. So let's jump into the story. Today's story picks up right where last week's left off. So again, those are all available online if you ever want to track with us that way. But as we get into this today, I want to say today's story will be found in Mark chapter 9 and Luke chapter 9, Mark and Luke. And Luke has one part of the story that Mark does not have. So we'll start with Mark, end in Luke, and then the verses will be on the screen to make it easy if that will help you. Let's jump in because we have some ground to cover. Mark 9 verse 30 says, leaving that region, they traveled through Galilee. Jesus did not want anyone to know he was there, for he wanted to spend more time with his disciples and teach them. Now, I think I said this once, but I want to lay this out clearly in this stage of our journey. Jesus is nearing the end, but that does not mean that we are near the end on Sundays of getting there. Like, he's going to get to Jerusalem. The next time he gets to Jerusalem will be Passover season. It'll be Palm Sunday for us and Passover and his crucifixion and resurrection. That's the next journey. He's been there several times. We've seen those stories. Next time will be the last time. And it's getting near. We're going to see today that he's going to end up in Capernaum, which is kind of far north part of the Sea of Galilee. He'll visit there again in today's story. And then he's going to pivot from there and start heading back down for the last meandering journey towards Jerusalem, where it will eventually be the final week. And it's getting near, but that doesn't mean that we're near it yet, because a lot happens in that journey, and we only get to tell a story or two a week, don't we? And there's only so many weeks, so it takes months to get a little ground covered sometimes in Jesus' story. So we have months ahead of us getting Jesus to that Jerusalem visit. Plus, we have some interruptions like Christmas messages and other things too. But we'll be months and months getting there. But overall, in his life, he's on that last leg, even though it'll take us a while to finish it. Think of it as being his last leg of this journey today. And so he wants to spend more time with his disciples, because you know how it is. And by the way, when you have a lot of influence and a lot of people to work with, it's hard to give. You only have so much time in a day. And Jesus, you know, could speak to the crowds as a whole and do miracles, but to pour into anybody a little bit extra, you need a smaller network of people that get the extra attention. You can't give everybody that. And so he wants to spend more time pouring into his disciples. He wants to teach them. You know why? Because when he does go, they're going to carry on the mission. And he prepares them to spread the word and multiply it. So he's got to pour into them a little more intentionally. So he's keeping his presence quiet to invest into them. Verse 31 tells us that he said to them, he said, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of his enemies. He will be killed, but 3 days later he will rise from the dead. Now, if that sounds familiar, if you're like Arlen, I think you've already read that passage before. I haven't. It's just because Jesus says this a lot. Like, he has said these exact same words more than once, and he's not done. There are certain drums that Jesus is going to keep on beating because he wants the point to get across. This is one. We'll see another drum he's going to start beating today in a little later. But there's another one that we've seen him hit before, which is basically the whole give up your own way, take up your cross daily, and follow me. There's certain themes that he keeps pounding because they're that important. And he wants his disciples to get the idea that he's going to Jerusalem the next time, where he'll be betrayed, suffer, he'll die, and then he will rise from the dead on the third day. And he's explaining that again, because that's the mission. It says in verse 32, they did not understand what he was saying, however, and they were afraid to ask what he meant. They're like, oh, I want to do with that. Again, they're always stumbling at this point. Notice what's on Jesus' mind, and notice that he's got a mission that he wants to bring them into. But I want us to now observe what's happening in the disciples' minds. Because as much as he tries to bring them into, this is what we're here to do, they keep getting distracted. Either they don't understand or they try to understand, and then something pulls their focus away. In fact, we're going to see three distractions in three short stories that pull their attention off the mission that Jesus is calling them to. And he has to help them get back on track. And that's going to help us today as well. Let's jump into them. The first one takes place in the very next verse, Mark 9, verse 33. It says, after they arrived at Capernaum and settled into a house, Jesus asked his disciples, hey, what were you discussing out on the road? You ever have someone ask you a question, you're like, oh man, they know the answer already. You know, it's like when you go home and your parents are like, hey, what time did you get in last night? I think they know. It's a trick. It's a trap. You know, Jesus asking a question, like, I'm pretty sure he knows the answer to this question. He was listening when we were talking, or he was talking to somebody else, but he just did that Jesus thing and he knows. What are you supposed to say? Because it says in the next verse that they did not answer because they had been arguing about which of them was the greatest. And they don't want to tell them that. They've been arguing on the way there about which of them was the greatest. That's great. So, I mean, here's the thing. We've seen it just a few weeks ago that Jesus had said, the disciples understood the significance of Christ, but they struggled with the suffering. They said, you're the Christ, you're the Son of the living God. His significance was clear, but they didn't like the suffering. But Jesus kept saying, my significance will be found in my suffering. But they struggled with this idea. So now they're like, hey, he's significant. He's the Messiah. The crowds come to hear him. He's the Son of God. We believe that. And we're his main guys. We're brought into the group to get ready and learn from him. I mean, he's spending more time with us lately and keeping his presence quiet because we're the bomb. So look, listen, if he's the main man, then what I want to know is who's the main man among the main men with the main man or something like that. And so they're all arguing, who's the greatest? Who's the greatest? And can you picture how this argument must have gone? I'm picturing it. I picture Matthew saying, well, guys, I mean, I know two cultures pretty well. I know the Roman culture because I was a tax collector and a Jewish culture, and I'm pretty diverse, so I think I'm the greatest. And then Peter and James and John are like, we're the three he keeps bringing into his special places, like the mountain last week. We haven't even came and tell you what we saw there yet, so neener, neener, neener. So we're special, and so it's us for sure. And then the other disciples are like, nah, James and John and Peter, I think it's because you need more attention, not because you're the greatest, okay? You just need more help. And then Andrew's like, no, guys, listen, I once followed John the Baptizer and Jesus, so I've been with two great ones, and I brought some of you with me, including my brother, to follow Jesus, so I'm obviously the greatest. And then Nathaniel or Bartholomew says, well, Jesus once said, I'm a perfect Israelite in whom there is nothing wrong, so it's obviously I'm the greatest. And Judas Iscariot's like, hey, guys, I hold the money bag. I'm the treasurer. Takes a special kind of person, so obviously I'm the greatest. And then Thomas is like, I doubt that. I think it's me. And they're all having a conversation, but who's the greatest? And Jesus gets them sitting down and says, fellas, let's talk about that. They were struggling with the first distraction that comes our way and gets us off mission, and that is the distraction of recognition. Does anybody see how important I am? Does anybody see what I do? I feel like no one appreciates my contribution. Why did that person get the promotion in the company, not me? Does no one appreciate what I do? Why did that person get called out and not me? Well, I haven't heard anyone say something about this yet. I don't think that anyone appreciates the value I add. I stand out. Does anyone realize I stand out? The recognition desire, which is not bad completely, but it becomes real bad. I mean, it's good to recognize people. But when you start deciding, where do I stand out and get my moment here, it's a distraction. And the disciples were arguing about the pecking order. And so Jesus, in verse 35, Jesus, he said, he sat down, he called the 12 disciples over to him, and he said, fellas, come here. Listen, whoever wants to be first must take last place and be the servant of everyone else. He says, that's not how it works out in the world. That's how it works in my economy. Now, I have to be careful about, Arlen has to be careful about how much I talk about this, because this is the other drum that Jesus is going to start beating a lot. We have multiple stories coming up where Jesus is going to make a whole talk about greatness is found in serving. And I don't want to steal that thunder too early, but he sort of begins to touch on it right here. He says, you want to understand what matters? Quit trying to be the first in line. Everyone wants to be first in line. Why don't you let someone else be first? If they want to be first, and so do you, why not let them have it? Why not say, go ahead? Why not just get to the back of the line and say, how can I serve? Because me, I deserve to be at the front. Yeah, doesn't everyone feel the desire for that? But how about you choose to serve? Jesus is like, that's what I came to do. That's exactly what I'm doing. I left heaven to serve the world and be what it needs. And who will follow me? But it was a distraction. We're going to skip a few verses because not for long. The next few verses, we're going to come back to them in about 2 weeks. So hang tight. They're going to be covered in another talk that will be more timely at that moment. But for today, Mark 9:38 brings us to our second adventure. Mark 9:38. John, now this is John the disciple, not John the baptizer. John the baptizer is dead now. John the disciple said to Jesus, "Teacher, we saw someone using your name to cast out demons, but we told him to stop because he wasn't in our group." Oh boy. By the way, if he feels like we're throwing the disciples under the bus today, let me be clear. They wrote these stories about themselves, okay? So they were just telling on themselves. And honestly, if I was a disciple, I can only imagine the tales that would be told about my insanity. So I'm thankful that that wasn't me. But anyhow, these are lessons to learn from. So what's happening here? Well, let's go back in time a little bit. When Jesus first came on the scene, who was the big shot in the world at the time religiously? Well, John the Baptizer was making a splash. Remember John the Baptizer? He was weird wardrobe, weird diet, strong message, and the crowds came and he was kind of the scene, baptizing everybody he could. It was John. And then he baptized Jesus one day and he said, "Hey guys, that's the one. That's the Messiah. Follow him." Some of John's own disciples left him, like Andrew, to follow Jesus. And then John would say, "That's okay. He must become greater. I must become less." Okay? That was his decision. And then everyone left to follow Jesus. And Jesus and his disciples were baptizing more than John. And John was kind of fading, and Jesus' moment was rising. And people who were close to John were defensive for John's sake. And John's like, "Guys, I told you no. That's okay. He can become greater. I can become less. The kingdom's growing. That's what matters. We're not competing." But the problem was when that happened, John the disciple was part of the group that was getting the market share. They were coming towards Jesus and the disciples. But now they're out there doing the thing they're doing. Well, here's the problem. Remember what Jesus' ministry looked like? Jesus' ministry, when he started it, he would go from town to town, village to village, and he would do miracles, heal the sick, cast out evil spirits. People would flock to him because he was helping them. Then he would teach them about the kingdom of God and point them to the Heavenly Father. Then he eventually told these disciples, "Guys, go in groups of two to each village and town like you've watched me do and do the same thing." He actually sent out 70 other people, other men and women, to do the same thing. But the 12 were the first ones he sent out. And he says, "Go out in groups of two and do miracles in my name, heal people, cast out demons in my name. And then as you meet people's felt needs, they're going to listen. And then when they listen, then you tell them about the gospel, the good news, the kingdom of God from there." That's our method. And they did, and they did a great job. They came back celebrating that they could do miracles, that the demons were obedient to them in the name of Jesus. And Jesus was like, "Yeah, that's cool, but even better, just rejoice that your names are written in heaven." Well, anyhow, they loved it. The market is all theirs. But now they come across somebody else who is doing the name of Jesus and casting out demons, and they're like, hey, he's not one of us. Hey, you need to knock that off. You're not in our group. And so they tell him to stop, and then they go back to Jesus, and John's going to tell, like a tattletale, like it's like the tattletale in school. He even says, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name. Can you believe the audacity? And we told him to stop because he wasn't in our group. And Jesus' response in verse 39 is, don't stop him. Don't stop him, Jesus said. No one who performs a miracle in my name will soon be able to speak evil of me. He's like, guys, listen, we have enemies. That's not our enemy. The enemies are those religious leaders who are fighting us, who are calling the work I'm doing the work of the devil. Someone that's out there doing good in my name isn't speaking bad of us. They're doing our, why would we be mad at him just because he's not in our group? And then Jesus makes this powerful statement I want to just talk about for a few minutes. He says, anyone who is not against us is for us. And that's a big statement. When I came across that many years ago, it just lit me up. Because I have, there's another statement Jesus made in a different place, in a different context, that sounds more like, yeah, if you're not for me, you're against me. Different context, different conversation. And I realized that a lot of people like to latch onto that version versus this version. Because for us, it's not a religious person problem. This is not a church person problem. This is a human person problem. So if you're a human person, humans, no matter what we believe or don't believe, we get tribal, we get defensive, we like to fight and fight. We like to have some ops to stand against, right? Because after all, it just draws some people. Get worked up, and I'll tell you, online world, the last 20 years has showed us that rage works better than, drawing silos works a lot better than figuring out how to love people. That's just human nature. In fact, I'm just going to take an intentional little rabbit trail to say this. I think in the church world, there's a lot of people I've learned over the last many years who have become professing Christians who I don't think are drawn to the Christian message because of what Jesus was about. That would not be exciting. It would be boring. Like, who wants to come because of all that God is love, that soft skills, blah, prayer, and I don't know. But people get drawn when they find there's something that I'm standing for and what I'm against, and if they can find a Christian version, and the more militant it is, the more, and we've seen it revive lately, the more militant my faith can be, or we're right, they're wrong, I'm against them, that just is like, I can relate to that because that's how I feel. And I'm going to just rally with a team that's against the others. And that militancy draws people who don't care about the love, sacrifice, serve. It's just that that's how you build a crowd. And you'll lose some of that crowd if they're looking for a fight, if you're not fighting, if you're teaching something different. Because there's a lot of, and it feeds into our carnal, if we can take our carnal nature and build it around God, and I can spiritualize it, I can spiritualize my animosity and my grumpiness and my desire to just, you know, boy, I can, that'd be great. I'd do it in Jesus' name. And so we're really good at that. And we do it in every sector of our lives. And some of us, again, not even religious. We're competitive with our business rivals in our businesses, people in our family. We struggle with these things, don't we? Happens all of the time. And we say, well, someone's not for me, they're against me. We do it in every, I'm going to talk about church in a minute here because I think we all share church in common. I think we do it with our political angst. We say if someone doesn't subscribe everywhere where I subscribe, they could be mostly in agreement with me, but if they're not always in lockstep with me, then they're in danger of helping the other side. And the other side, I'm going to villainize by making everything seem like the most extreme version of the things I'm against and put everyone in the same boat. And if you're not in lockstep with me, then you're basically helping them and you're against me. We love to just draw lines in the sand with people rather than drawing bigger circles. It's just something about, and unfortunately, it happens in our lives and it can sometimes creep into our religion. And churches can get this way. And you know, we can consider others, denominations are wrong because we don't agree about something. We wouldn't talk to that group because they got this doctrine wrong. And I'm looking at these other denominations and I'm saying, if you guys believe that Jesus is the Son of God, yes, so do I. He's the Savior of the world, yes, so do I. Then we're on the same team. So yeah, but we disagree on big doctrinal disputes like baptism practices, when and how, tongues things, election and free will and end times and beginning times and all sorts of stuff. And if you don't see it my way, then you're wrong and you're the enemy. And it's like, whoa, can we all agree that if we line up with Jesus, that's what counts? And as far as those other doctrinal controversies, the fact that good, sincere, God-loving people disagree on them might just inform us that they're maybe complicated. Maybe they're challenging. Maybe there's a few verses, everyone's got a few verses in their team's pocket. And maybe just means that we should just have humility and say, none of us have a corner on the truth, and we'll see that someday potentially. Well, I do. I got this right in there. Maybe so, but maybe not. We're talking about this between services, Nathan. How many times we've grown in spots in our lives where once things we firmly held at one time become later on positions we've shifted. But that might be over for us. You may have that coming 10 years on the road. And how sad along the way when we have been so sure of ourselves when we were wrong, and then now sure of ourselves in a new place and wrong, to not look at people and say, hey, where do we agree? Do we agree that Jesus is the Son of God? Then it's okay, we might be in the same exact circle, but I'm not against you, I'm for you. And that goes for denominations, that goes for churches individually. The churches in this town are not our competition. Again, this applies to your life and your family, your business, but I'm just trying to make it an example of us collectively. In the church world, churches in this town are my competition or your competition. Does that mean I don't want us to grow? And does it mean it's hard when others are growing better or someone else might be? Sure. I ask questions. Does anyone lose people easily? No. I'm going to tell you right now, I never lose anyone from the church where it doesn't hurt. It always does. It's like, how did I fail? What's wrong with me? I suck. Or maybe it's like, no, I thought we were friends, and maybe I deflect that direction. It's just hard emotionally. But you don't become rivals with people or other churches because of those. You know, I remember talking to the pastor at Faith, Dave Wiemhoff, years ago and saying, hey, man, we're all trying to reach the same community, and there's half the town isn't going anywhere. That's our target audience, not each other's flock, right? But it's easy to get competitive. And for some of us in our life, we have competition. And we find the differences and say, well, you don't line up with me, so you're not for me, you're against me. But Jesus was doing the opposite. He's like, hey, if someone's not against us, then they're for us. He's like, fellas, that guy out there, he's not our enemy. Quit drawing lines in the sand and draw a bigger circle and say, hey, we got some common ground. Let's find where our ground is common and not where it's not. In fact, he's addressing the second distraction on the screen here, which is the distraction of rivalry. I kind of hit it already, but I forgot to put it on the screen. Rivalry, it stirs up in all of us. It's easy to be at rivals with even sometimes your siblings, right? Or sometimes your family, or sometimes your coworkers, or your neighbors, or other people. But Jesus says this in Mark 9:41. He says, if anyone gives you even a cup of water because you belong to the Messiah, I tell you the truth, that person will surely be rewarded. Think about that. He says, if someone comes along and the only thing they do for you is give you a cup of water, they don't jump into your cause, they don't sign up for everything you believe in, they're not on your team, all they do is one time say, here's a cup of water, that might help. You don't sit there and say, well, it's the least you could do. I'll tell you what, I get with the program. You say, thank you. There's a reward for that because God is looking for ways to say, what can I find where we can celebrate and agree versus finding all the nuance that we can fight about? And so he challenges this distraction. And then there's one more story. It's in Luke. Only in Luke. Luke 9:51. This one's great. As the time drew near for him to ascend to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. Again, we're not that near the end, but he's in that back stretch of his journey. And so he's going to start heading from Capernaum, the furthest north he'll be ever again in this world before his death. And he begins to head to Jerusalem direction. Verse 52 says that he sent messengers ahead to a Samaritan village to prepare for his arrival. Real quick, I can't talk about the tension, but I need to remind us briefly that the Samaritans and the Jewish people did not get along real well. The Jews considered everyone who was not a Jew to be a Gentile. The Samaritans were oftentimes a mixed group of Jews who married Gentiles generationally, and so they were considered not pure in origin. They hated each other. There was racial tension. There was religious tension. There was a temple that the Samaritans built while Jerusalem was torn down, and then they fought Jerusalem from building theirs. So then when theirs got built a couple centuries later, they tore down the one in Mount Gerizim and caused bad animosity. There's political tension about it doesn't matter. I can't get into that. Samaritans and Jews were at odds, but Jesus never cared. Jesus, actually, one of the first people he ever proclaimed his messiahship to was a Samaritan woman. One of the first ministries he ever did was at length in a Samaritan village. Didn't bother him, but it bothered many Jews that he would do that, and bothered many Samaritans because they didn't like each other. But Jesus is like, who cares? So he's on his way to Jerusalem. He sees a village, sends his guys ahead, tells them to get ready. We're coming into town on our way to Jerusalem. Verse 53 says, but the people of the village did not welcome Jesus because he was on his way to Jerusalem. People of the village are like, oh no, uh-uh. I mean, if your own, we've heard about you, if your own Jewishness doesn't bother us, then the fact that you're heading to Jerusalem certainly does, because that means you're one of them. You're one of the hardcore ones. Oh, to the temple that still stands? How nice. You know what? We don't like them, and we're not going to accommodate you in our village. So guess what? Stay away. The hotels are full. The food is not serving you in our restaurants. Don't come into town. You're not welcome here. Now, how many of, I won't ask you to raise your hand, but if I was to say how many of us like rejection and you raised your hand, I'm going to ask, we have a licensed therapist in the room to talk with you. Nobody likes rejection, do we? I mean, it's not normal. When someone rejects us, it feels personal. To feel rejected feels like we feel put down, don't we? In fact, for many of us, it's a control thing. When people reject us, it feels like they control us. They say what we can and cannot do. And for some of us, we have a real therapeutic need to deal with our control issues. No one's going to control me. And so rejection feels that way. It feels like someone's limiting me or doing this. And it's personal. It's like when a couple of kids break up, by the way. You're seeing a boy and girl dating and they break up. You know which one's always upset in the breakup? The one who got dumped. Because you know why? They may have both been fighting and both probably would agree, yeah, this ain't going to work. But the one who gets broken up with is like, you feel like you got put down, like they were better. They made the decision that you got put down. And it is hard. And the other one's like, why? Why are you taking it so personal? Then they're mad at them for being so mad. Like, we could be friends, you know? And there's this tension. I remember a situation where a few times through the years where someone, like maybe a girl and a guy date, and then she breaks up with him, and he breaks up with her. And she's upset and hurt by it. Then they get back together. Then she gets up with him. Then he's upset. The person who feels displaced takes it personal, because who likes rejection? Again, if you raise your hand, I got some help for you, okay? It's not fun. It's like going to a job and you apply and it doesn't work out. And then you just don't like that company anymore because they didn't hire me, you know? Or it could be, you know, it could be your friend circles and someone walks away from you. And it's just so personal. You don't feel invited to a thing, and you're just like, fine, I don't like you either. It's just personal to feel rejected. And nobody likes it, including Jesus and the disciples. They were just told by a Samaritan village. The messengers who arrived there were like escorted out of town. Stay out of here. Verse 54, when James and John, we saw John a minute ago, here's his brother James. James and John are brothers. By the way, they're called the Sons of Thunder. Perhaps for this reason. It says, when James and John saw this, they said to Jesus, Lord, should we call down fire from heaven to burn them up? This is their plan. Let's call down some fire from heaven, burn them to the ground. What? Now I only can imagine that they read in their Hebrew scriptures one time that Elijah once called fire from heaven. In fact, James and John just saw Elijah on the Mount of Transfiguration, so we saw that last week. So maybe they're like, yeah, fire from heaven, that'll teach them. They'll never disrespect us again. Tell us we can't. I'll tell you what, when they're in ashes, we'll see who laughs last and who screams last. I mean, you know, I mean, no one's going to do that to us, right? Because I hate to feel put down. And here's how we justify it. It's not even for me. I'm defending Jesus. They rejected Jesus, you know, so I can really be extra mad when I'm doing it for someone I care about. But it says in verse 55, but Jesus turned and he rebuked them. That's all it says. He like turns it out. Oh, I'd love to hear that transcript. He's like, really, fellas? Really? You want to call on fire from heaven and burn them up? That's your plan. Guys, I'm about to go to Jerusalem to die for the sins of the world. So everyone who walked away from God and went away, I'm humbling myself to death to show the world that God just is willing to take it and bring them back because he wants relationship with them still. Like, I'm here to redeem a rebel race. John, later, Jesus is going to say, John, later, you're going to write about me and say that I came to my own people and they rejected me. But I still died for them because I want them back. And, but you think that because someone rejected us today, we should call fire from heaven and consume them? Like, that's your plan? That's the opposite of what I'm here to do. And he rebukes them for it. And then it says this, so they went on to another village. He's like, we'll just stay somewhere else. But what about them? What about them? Well, something that should not be allowed to stand. Who cares? We're just going to go somewhere else. But somewhere else is out of the way, so we'll go out of our way. They inconvenienced us. It doesn't matter. Because we have to get somewhere. And we can't deal with this distraction. The distraction the disciples were struggling with now was the distraction of revenge. Revenge. Oof. Nobody speaks about me or to me that way. Nobody does that. No one gets in my way. No one tells me I can't. I'll tell you, they'll pay. Jesus is like, what is it? Why? Let's just go somewhere else and get where we're going. I'm about to die for them too. Here's what's interesting as we come full circle. Jesus was focused on what needed to be done, but they were focused on how they were seen, which is normal. It's human. He's focused on what needs to be done. And they're thinking, how are we seen? I'm the greatest. Who's the greatest? Which of us is the best of us? Hey, you're not in our team. You can't do that. That's not your job. How dare you not let us in your place? How dare you reject us? We'll make you pay. All these things were personal. And Jesus was just trying to complete the mission. But they were focused on how they were viewed. That's pride. It's pride. And pride is at the root of everything you and I ever struggle with. If you want to get down to the heart of our distractions and our struggles, it's always, and pride looks different in different moments of my life and between different people, but it's always pride. And here's the thing about pride. Pride always gets us off mission, doesn't it? It always gets us off mission because pride makes me the point at the expense of my purpose. Pride makes me the point at the expense of what I'm called to do. And it gets us off mission. And you're like, well, Arlen, I'm going to disagree. I'm a proud person, but it doesn't stop me. It doesn't need to stop us. It just needs to distract us. You're watching sports, and we know something about sports. It's not always, sometimes just slowing someone down or distracting them is enough to lose the game. Sometimes being distracted is enough to not complete the task. It's the focus that counts, and pride can at the very least distract us and make a massive impact on what we're trying to do. And so today, Jesus was saying, fellas, beat the drum again. I'm going to Jerusalem. It's almost like a song. I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to die and I'm going to rise again. And they're like, huh? And so then distraction. So we saw three distractions from mission today. Three distractions from mission that we saw today, and they are as follows. Recognition, rivalry, and revenge. Recognition, does anyone see what I do? Does anybody appreciate that I stand out? I don't feel like anyone knows how much I stand out. You know what? I'm taking my talents to South Beach. That's what I'm doing. I mean, it is terrible. I shouldn't pick on that. That was like a shot against somebody who I'm not picking at. But you know what I'm saying? Recognition. I demand my just deserts. Rivalry. Like, they're my competition. They're the ops. I'm threatened by them. They don't line up with me. They don't agree with me, so therefore they're the enemy. Versus saying, well, what do we share in common, and are you really the enemy? Rivalry. And then revenge. No one treats me that way and gets away with it. You will rue the day. Right? These are distractions from mission. Now, the disciples faced them all. I mean, imagine. Imagine walking with the King of Kings and being worried about your status. Imagine being with the one who was rejected by others and then not accepting others yourself. Imagine being on the way to save the world and then asking Jesus to kill people along the way. Distraction. It's pride. So I want to give us these three words. I want to give you a question for each word. Three questions to bring us back on track, and here's why. However pride shows up in my life, in your life, the secret is to get ourselves to ask the right question that lines us back up to what we're called to do. And maybe yours is a different question, but if these are the three things that we're facing, and maybe some of us are facing today, I want to give you a question with each of these areas to help us get back on track. First of all, when we're struggling with the desire for recognition, ask this question, am I serving? Am I serving? The recognition is like, am I being noticed? Am I getting my, but the question is, am I serving? Well, I have been. Sometimes the problem is we have been, but then we get distracted over recognition. And we're like, well, Arlen, there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. We should all want to recognize others for what they do. But here's the thing. It can become a monster in my life when I get consumed with being recognized. And Jesus served his whole life. Yeah, well, Jesus later died on the cross, Arlen. Let me just give you a little Bible knowledge, Arlen. Jesus died on the cross, he rose again, and then he went to heaven where the scriptures tell us later that he's been highly exalted, given a name above all names. He's been recognized. Exactly. In the next life. So the takeaway might just be, I'll wait till then for God to call it out. But right now the question is, am I serving like Jesus did in this life? Am I willing to say what needs to be done, what can be done? I'm doing it for him. I'm doing it for him. Am I serving? And that question is a simple realignment back to my values. Or should be my values as a Jesus follower. Am I serving? When we struggle with the distraction of rivalry, the question we need to ask is, how can I support you? I want to treat you like you're the enemy. I'm envious. But how can I support you? And I know that as soon as I ask that question, I know the pushback could be, hold on, Arlen, support a rival? Maybe it's my business and I have a rival business, or maybe it's the church itself, for example, and other churches. I or we don't have enough energy. We need support for ourselves. We can't support somebody else. We can barely get our own stuff done. What do you mean, how can I support you? I need support. I'm not saying you can always support someone who's a rival in a tangible way. Although sometimes you don't think you can, then something happens, and you can. If you're looking for it, you might find it. But even if you can't, asking the question, how can I support you, changes something in us. It changes my heart from being against you to saying, hey, how can I come alongside of you? It moves me from side by side versus adversarially face to face. How can I support you? Even if I can't, other than prayer, that posture fixes everything in me. How can I support you? And then, when we struggle with the distraction of our desire for revenge, the question we can ask is, do I have more important things to do? Do I? Jesus said earlier, guys, we have more important things to do. Yeah, but we got to deal with those people. They need to know. They can't get away with that. Well, that's not our mission. Our mission is to get. Let's just stay somewhere else. We got to get to Jerusalem. Here's the question I have: do you have more important things to do than getting back at somebody? I can tell you, all my life, I've watched people that are respectable, sometimes influencers, and they'll do something, and the people respect. They'll get a following. And sometimes people aren't following, but they're watching, and maybe they're gonna soon jump on board. And that person, as their work is growing, suddenly someone attacks them, and they get so upset by it, and they feel like they shouldn't be treated, that they turn and they fight, they get petty. They fight back. And it gets this ugly, petty fight going, and everyone who was watching it is like, ew, wow, that was disappointing. And they lose momentum because they lost the mission for a moment. It's sad because things are going to happen and people are going to disappoint. People are going to hurt us. That's just how it goes. But getting back at them or showing them up is not a good cause to live for. Do I have more important things to do? Do I have something to be about that deserves my attention more than that? And that question can just line us right back up to a healthy spot when we get distracted. Now, my question for you today as I get ready to wrap this up now is this. Which of those, are any of those three things an area that hits home with you right now? The struggle for recognition, the struggle with rivalry, the struggle for revenge. Maybe it's a different form of pride. Pride shows up a lot of ways, and pride always gets us off mission. Here's my question to you. Are any of these questions the question that you need to be wrestling with today? And that's the Holy Spirit's job, not my job to tell you, because I don't know your story. But I know my story. I know where I need to look at. Are any of those questions the question that you need to take home with you today and say, I need to wrestle that one down? Am I serving? How am I serving? Look at somebody else that I'm at odds with. How can I support you? Someone I want to get back at, and I stay up at late night, and I think about them, I lose sleep over them, I'm obsessed. I have more important things to do. What's the question that you need to wrestle to the ground? And the reason I encourage you to do it is this reason right here. Because our mission deserves our attention. And that goes for any mission that you're on, whether the mission of your company that you feel God called you to start, or you know, your influence you're trying to build, or your relationships that are important. As a church, our mission, as Jesus followers, we all have a mission to follow him. Our mission, it deserves our attention. And when our pride wants to distract us away from it, the best thing we can do is say, I know what matters. And I'm going to get back on focus. May it be so.